Have you ever had someone recommend something to you?
Have you ever asked for a recommendation?
Have you ever taken a recommendation you regretted?
Do you have something you want to recommend?
Welcome to
Recommended to Me by a Friend.
Join two college friends with vastly different opinions and wildly different tastes
as we push the boundaries of friendship by forcing ourselves to take each other's movie recommendations.
And we will discuss whether it was worth our time
or if one of us owes the other a drink.
I'm Aubrey.
And I'm Leah.
And this is
Recommended to Me by a Friend.
Good drink.
Like a hard drink.
Like a hard drink.
I got some moonshine.
Of course you do. All right.
We're so excited.
Woo! All right. We are back.
We're excited.
Yes, so we are here again recording. I'm Aubrey.
And I'm Leah.
And this is
Recommended to Me by a Friend.
What are we up to?
Yo-ho, a pirate's life for me. We're devils, we're black sheep, we're really bad eggs. Drink up, me hearties, yo-ho. Yo-ho. Should I stop or should I keep singing? I don't know.
No, we're good.
You weren't actually doing anything, so I was like, should I just keep going?
I wanted to see where you were going to take it.
I mean, I was going to take it at least through the song.
All right.
As much of it as I can remember.
Here's the thing, listeners, that we hope are here. Also my dad, who I'm sure is listening. Here's the thing, Dad. We're back. If you stuck around with us the last episode, we talked...
I feel like your father already knows a lot of your opinions regarding Pirates of the Caribbean.
He does, but he's a really supportive dude, so he will listen.
Okay.
But that being said... Hi, Dad. And anybody else who might also be listening, I'm very
waving
excited.
At the microphone this were, like, a news interview and I'm the random person in the background. Hi, Mom.
Hi
Dad.
No. Hi, Aubrey's Dad.
Anyway... so we are talking... Go ahead.
Okay, the point is that we spent a long time talking about Pirates of the Caribbean, Curse of the Black Pearl.
We spent a long time, but it's a favorite. It is a favorite. It has been a favorite for a very, very long time, and it does not... There's not a lot, really, that we don't like about it.
That's true.
So...
And there's a lot of different things, given
that
it's
we want to make commentary on, yeah.
Like, 15 years of this movie, and we're like, there's little things that you think about later. Mm-hmm. But, at the time, though, it was a standalone film.
Mm-hmm.
And then Disney said, hey, I know how to make money.
Yeah, and to be fair, at the time, the sci-fi action fantasy type movie was very, very popular.
That is true.
Because we had Harry Potter. We had Lord of the Rings. We had, I think, some of the other Star Warses were they then? Yeah, I can't remember. I can't remember with those ones. But yeah, those were kind of the main biggies that were just always coming out. There was always at least one a year. And so they had to, you know, kind of jump on the bandwagon.
Well, after this perfect film, well, we argue that it is perfect. If not perfect, then pretty damn close. Curse of the Black Pearl.
It was solid, good cinema.
3 years after that,
mm-hmm.
They came out with this movie, this new movie.
Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Man's Chest.
Dead Man's Chest. And as a fan, I was psyched to hear it.
And for me, I was a new fan... relatively new fan, but I mean, when you present something to a teenager that it was that good and that fun and exciting, I am a solid fan then.
Mm-hmm.
Instantly solid fan. And I remember seeing the trailer for it in theaters and being really, really excited about it. I was just like, oh, we get another one? Oh, this is going to be so much fun. And I was looking forward to that. I would literally, in a weird sort of way, I went to see that same movie that I initially saw the trailer in a couple of times.
Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe?
Yeah, it was Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. I might have seen that a couple of times and also saw that trailer several times, and sometimes I was more excited about the trailer for Pirates than I actually was about seeing the movie. seeing Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, that is.
I get that. Mm-hmm. And keep in mind, again, this is before you could, like, look up a movie clip,
mm-hmm.
you know, or, like, a movie trailer. It wasn't just readily available all the time.
It was always fun when it would come on TV.
Mm-hmm.
I would be like, oh, it's the Pirates trailer.
It's very exciting. So, by virtue of the first film, they really had sold those tickets.
Oh, yeah.
Now, whether or not the true fans were happy with the product that came out is a bit of a mixed bag.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the thing is, I told you before, the Pirates' Tales is a love story. And it's a love story not of Elizabeth and Will and not of Jack and the Pearl or even... Elizabeth and Jack, as they try to imply in this film.
Yeah.
And we'll get there. But I fell in love with this franchise, not knowing it was a franchise. And I'm going to tell you right off the bat, this movie was the first significant argument that this franchise and I had.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't a relationship ender, okay? We're going to start out with that. Another thing I want to point out, you cannot judge this unfairly because it is not a story in of its own. It needs the third film.
It does. And unfortunately, we'll get there.
The story itself. Now, that's not to say both this story had to be told in two movies. That's not to say that at all. I think it could have been condensed to a long movie, but one. But because they stretched it out, you got a lot of extra fluff and filler.
Mm-hmm.
But as it is, we are sticking with this episode specific to Dead Man's Chest.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I did see this in the theater.
Mm-hmm. Same as me. I got to see it with my mom, which was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed getting to see it with her because she was fangirling over it just as much as me. And it was like hot July afternoon. And on our way home, we rescued a cat.
Nice.
Out of a drain.
Nice.
Yeah, I remember that. That all just kind of happened the same day. It was fun.
Very fun.
Yeah.
I went to go see it at the midnight movie premiere.
Oh, fun.
I went with some friends of mine. We got there, and I remember this big souvenir cup that I still have.
Mm-hmm.
There was a big popcorn bucket, which is somewhere. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And it was one of the first times I went to go see a midnight movie premiere, first off. And I remember I was sitting in the very, very back row, just center, right in front of the projection booth, because I wanted mm-hmm. to, like, see everything. I had a small group of people with me. And I just remember I was very much in love with this franchise, and so I wanted to look past the flaws, which I did for a very long time, and we're going to talk about the good, the bad, and the squiddy, but...
Yeah, a little tentacly.
This was growing up. This was a great continuation, but it became clear, especially in hindsight, they were not prepared to make a movie sequel from the first one, and they didn't know what they were going to do with it. They had... It's like a monkey getting hold of a torch. It's very exciting, and you could do anything with it, mm-hmm. but chances are you're just going to do a lot of damage.
Especially if you're an undead monkey.
Especially, I didn't even think of that. Undead monkey.
Top that.
Here's a fun fact. The last movie mm-hmm. ends with a cutscene mm-hmm. in, like, mid-credits, post-credits. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people didn't understand because the monkey takes a coin
mm-hmm.
and then he becomes cursed.
Again.
So a lot of people were like, oh, retcon, why is the monkey cursed? Because he's fine now. Because he got recursed.
He got recursed, yeah. And so the monkey continues to be an undead monkey.
Undead monkey.
Throughout.
Now.
And I guess, you know, as a monkey, he's okay.
He's fine.
Yeah.
He's
okay.
He does what monkeys do.
Yeah, he just monkeys around.
Oh.
I know. Yeah. That was too easy. I'm sorry.
I liked it. Okay.
You did? That was too easy. I could have done better.
Do it.
We're past it now.
Okay.
We are well past it. I cannot come up with anything else.
Okay.
Not right now. He does monkey business. I could have done better.
Could you?
No.
Could you really? So.
Cuts, monkey shines.
Proud of yourself?
Monkey see, monkey do.
You got one more in the chamber, I know. I know you do. What is it?
I don't.
Okay.
Do I have any? Nope.
This movie picks up after, you know, it is, I kind of like where it starts because it's this rainstorm in Port Royal.
Yeah.
And there's a really hauntingly beautiful shot of Elizabeth in the rain in her wedding dress and she's got the veil and, you know, she's just sitting there and you see Will as being escorted in mm-hmm. irons.
Well, the implication at first, though, is that Will has stood her up because she's the only one there and everybody's kind of run in out of the rain and everything and the groom is not there.
Mm-hmm.
And so that initial little bit of implication you see in her face, she looks real upset and she doesn't know why he's not there. And we're thinking, or she's thinking, he stood me up at the altar. And then we find out, no, he's being brought in chains.
Introduction of a new character. Lord
Ugh.
Cutler Beckett.
Ugh.
Here's
I'm making the same sound that Jack Sparrow makes in reference to him as well. Just blah.
Here is the problem with Cutler Beckett.
He is an ice cream with an ego.
That is beautiful.
Well, he is.
He is. But I was just going to like, just something
he's
really lame.
He's got this sort of Napoleon sort of syndrome going on.
Now, he's played by, who's he played by?
Tom Hollander.
Who also was in...
Uh-huh. He played Mr. Collins in Pride and Prejudice that also, in that, what was it, 2005 Pride and Prejudice?
Maybe. With Keira Knightley.
Yeah, with Keira Knightley. The one that was pursuing her, Pride and Prejudice.
2005.
2005, yeah.
You got it.
That was pursuing Keira Knightley as Elizabeth... Wait. No. Yes? Is that the name of the character in... Pride and Prejudice?
Elizabeth!
She's playing another Elizabeth.
Wow.
I said that, and I was like, wait, that can't be right. And I know that story.
Whoa.
Like, wait, hold up. Yeah, well, okay, so apparently Tom Hollander just has a thing for either Keira Knightley or characters named Elizabeth.
I do not see why the two are mutually exclusive. This is the Venn diagram portion right here.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Lord Cutler Beckett, here's the thing. I find it a little suspect, and you're going to hear a lot of us maybe attacking this film. Keep in mind, I am still, at this point, whenever I saw it, it's like, no, it's a good film. It has mm-hmm. a good heart. It just gets a little cranky sometimes.
Mm-hmm. It's a fun movie. It is a fun movie. It just, they set up a lot of things in it that then either A, don't get delivered upon in the third movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's very clear there's a lot of things that just kind of get thrown out there. That are entertaining but don't really do anything mm-hmm. for the story. And then there's things from the previous movie that they kind of bring in but they then don't do anything with. Or they harp on too much.
Yeah.
So you're like, oh, stop. Just because we liked it the first time doesn't mean the joke was funny the first time, but it's not now. It's gotten old.
Sometimes it does work.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to start a new segment here called Does It Work? Yay or Nay? But we'll... Okay.
All right.
So the thing is... Our last villains were a cutthroat crew of cursed undead pirates
mm-hmm.
led by the fearsome Captain Barbossa.
Mm-hmm.
And now we have Lord Cutler Beckett.
Mm.
And, okay, he comes in kind of like a badass, not going to lie, a little bit.
I think, okay, so here is something that I have a little bit of a problem with
okay. In
this movie. And I might be getting ahead of myself slightly, but... I think what they did, one thing that they did with this, they tried to make it too big. The thing that was so wholesome about the original movie is it had that, old, like you were saying in the previous episode, it had that old, wholesome, you know, old story, mythological sort of feel to it, where actually the players and the characters in it, the story itself is actually very, very simple. And there is one villain, we know who that villain is, and we don't have a bunch of confusion of who really is the big bad guy here.
Mm-hmm.
In this one, and in the third one, they have entirely too many bad guys.
Oh, yeah.
And you're...
Well, the first of which is, of course, this Cutler Beckett dude.
Mm-hmm.
Who, you know...
He's just smarmy.
Will is being arrested.
Mm-hmm.
They want to know why. He refuses to answer, and he's like, no, here's the warrant. And I do think it is kind of funny. He goes...
This warrant is for Elizabeth Swan.
Oh, is it? That's annoying. My mistake. Arrest her.
Mm-hmm. And I thought that was pretty funny. And then you find out they are being arrested for helping Jack escape.
Mm-hmm.
The charge is conspiring to set free a man convicted of crimes against the crown and empire and condemned to death, for which the
punishment, regrettably, is also death.
He also has a warrant for... James Norrington,
mm-hmm.
who has apparently left. Now, they are arrested. Whenever mm-hmm. he says, you know...
Perhaps you remember a certain pirate named Jack Sparrow.
Captain!
Mm-hmm.
Does it work?
Let's do it together. One, two, three. Captain!
Yay! Oh. I see.
What?
Does it work? Yes or no? Yay or
no? Oh, yes.
So
that
does
works.
The joke, so
it
does,
plays well.
Does the joke work?
Yes.
Yay.
Yay.
Yay. 100%.
I!
Oh, yeah, aye.
Let's do this.
Yeah.
The ayes have it. Aye!
All right, so they're arrested, and the punishment for helping somebody accused of piracy is...
Death.
Death. So, meanwhile, Jack is aboard the Black Pearl looking at charts. He's clearly drunk. He picks up the rum bottle and says...
Why is the rum always gone?
Does it work? Nay.
No, not really, because it doesn't have that... Like, it, the way that it played out in the original movie, it was very organic.
Yeah.
Because it's when they're there on the island, and he's, you know, they've just been talking about the rum. They've just been talking about the rum runners and their cash and all that stuff. And then Elizabeth burns it all. And then he goes, why is the rum gone?
Says, you burned everything. The food, the shade, the rum. Yes, the rum is gone.
Why is the rum gone?
Then she has her little speech, and then, yes, but why is the rum gone?
Yeah.
That is funny, because it's organic.
Mm-hmm.
In this scenario, we're pandering.
Yeah. It's just literally him reaching over there and going, oh, look, the bottle's empty, even though I know full well there are more bottles down in the cellar. Or not in the cellar. In the hold. Where would they keep rum in there?
No.
Okay. Well, it's in one of the holds. Yeah. It's a supply hold. I don't know. Anyway, he knows that, so there's no reason for him to say that, except literally, it's almost like a little aside to the audience without being an aside.
Yeah, it's like he could have done the same thing by looking at the audience and going, this is a pirate movie, and then saying, not doing, wink.
Yeah.
Like, oh, God. All right. So he gets up, he passes by the crew. It is nice to see some familiar faces. He passes the crew. By the way, he passes Joshua Gibbs, who's singing, you know, 15 men on the dead man's chest. Dead man's chest, you know what that is? Not in relation to the movie, what it really was.
I do not.
The Dead Man's Chest was a rocky, small island in the Caribbean.
Okay.
And it was a very small spit of land. It had no vegetation or shade. And it was... the rocks made it look as though it was a rib cage.
Ooh.
And, again, no shade or anything like that. Sometimes the waves would actually wash over, completely over. So if a pirate, or I'm sorry, if a sailor were marooned there, it was almost certainly a death sentence.
Oh, wow.
Used sparingly, but historically used.
Wow. Anyway. I did not know that.
So he passes by.
He goes down into the hold. After Cutler Beckett has arrested Will and Elizabeth, we cut over to this... we're assuming it's like this horrible island jail down in the Caribbean.
In my mind, I call it Pirate Azkaban.
That'd be about accurate, yeah. I actually saw, I watched behind the scenes of them casting the prisoners for that. And they were like, we need people that are not particularly nice looking and look like the kind of people that would end up in a place like this. And you had these guys all in there and they looked so, they were real, real skinny guys. So they needed to fit that look of, I've been in prison for a long time. And they had them like sit down in a chair and then act out what it would be like to have your eyes pecked out by a crow in a prison. And
when you audition to be a Disney cast member, which I'm not, I never have been, but I have some friends that did it. They every face character also has to do a fur character, and you're asked to mutely pantomime things like a tree growing or like something. You always see, it's kind of neat.
Yeah, your basic actor exercises.
Jack manages to escape the prison, because
he does it in a very like classic. Count of Monte Cristo kind of way, where he's tossed out in a coffin.
Yep.
And then you see him burst through the coffin.
He uses the leg of the deceased as an oar,
and he, which I don't think that would actually work.
Nope. Okay, so then the crew, the Pearl picks him up, and he shows that what he had to go through all that for is a piece of cloth with a drawing of a key.
Mm-hmm.
I have this key. I love this key.
Oh, cool.
It's a very neat key. I like keys in general, but this one in particular. He sidesteps what it's for. Here again, you lose a little bit of that Jack Sparrow charm. Because he's not talking, you know, where he's keeping information. He's just talking gibberish. He's just talking in circles.
So we're setting out to find whatever this key unlocks.
No. If we don't have the key, we can't open whatever it is we don't have that it unlocks. So what purpose would be served in finding whatever need be unlocked, which we don't have, without first having found the key, what unlocks it?
So, we're going after this key!
You're not making any sense at all.
Yeah, yeah. He gets a little bit... It almost has this quality of... The original Jack, everything that came out of his mouth was very calculated. This, it sounds almost like somebody that is perpetually on something.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody... they're not weighing their words.
Somebody who got a description of how Jack would speak, but never actually saw it.
Yeah.
All right. So then you cut to later. He's looking for the rum and all that. Anyway, he goes to find more alcohol, and there he's hit with a voice. And it's just, it's a really well-used sound.
Time's run out, Jack.
there he's met with
Bootstrap Bill Turner, played by Stellan Skarsgård.
Yep.
Now, in the original movie, they kept commenting on the fact that Will Turner is the spitting image of Bootstrap Bill. Come back to haunt us.
Yep.
Stellan Skarsgård and Orlando Bloom look absolutely nothing alike, even when there are no fish things all over Stellan Skarsgård's face.
They look exactly nothing alike.
Exactly. Yes. I feel like Stellan Skarsgård does a fantastic job. Mm-hmm. And he always does a fantastic job. Stellan Skarsgård plays Dr. Erik Selvig in the Thor movies and the Avengers. Basically any ones that has Dr. Erik Selvig in it. So he is a fantastic actor. However, he looks nothing like Orlando Bloom.
So,
and I feel like that kind of...
Would you have preferred them to cast Orlando Bloom in the role?
No, I would have preferred they see if they could find somebody... I don't think he was popular at the time, but, you know, the actor Luke Evans, who played Gaston, he's also in the Hobbit movies, like he's done a lot of really good stuff.
Been really young then,
He's a little bit younger than Orlando Bloom, but they look very similar, and so they could have aged him up. I'm not saying that they cast him, but they could have aged him up.
Yeah, I could see that.
Just someone kind of like that, a little bit darker-haired... A little bit more classically handsome, that would have worked better.
Although, that being said, I did like the performance of Bootstrap.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Okay, so basically he says, time's run out. Couple little tidbits of information here.
You made a deal with him too, Jack. He raised the pearl from the depths for you. 13 years you've been a captain.
Technically.
Jack, you won't be able to talk yourself out of this. The terms would apply to me, apply to you as well. One soul, bound to crew 100 years upon a ship. Jones' terrible Leviathan will find you. You will drag the pearl back to the depths and you along with it.
He says that you made a deal, you had 13 years.
He raised the pearl.
Raised the pearl. And you could call yourself Captain Jack Sparrow. So anyway, he says, well, how much time do I have? And he says, I've already told you, time's run out. This is the introduction of the black spot, which I like because it was a real thing. It was typically torn out of the page of a Bible to make it sacrament, and it was a pirate death sentence. Hmm. By the way, it wasn't like, hang on to it and we'll find you with it. It was just like, just so you know, you're screwed. But in this case, it was a marking brand because it has a supernatural element.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so we don't really know what exactly Jack is running away from, although we do get a little thing with these two Portuguese fishermen that find this hat.
Yeah, they do. Poor guys.
And the reasoning behind it, because Jack's hat falls overboard, and then they find it, and then...
Jack's hat falls overboard. This is after he's talked to Bootstrap, which Bootstrap has magically ended up on the ship, by the way. And then he magically disappears off the ship.
If you've got a problem with magic pirates, you're in the wrong franchise.
That is fair. I don't have any problems with magic pirates. I'm just commenting on that.
I don't either. So if Jack there's any magical pirates listening out there, hit me up.
I'm sorry I insulted you, magic pirates. But yeah, Jack's freaked out. He comes running back on deck. His crew are asking where they want him to go, and he's like, basically,
land.
I don't care, land. And then when his hat flies overboard, they try to go get it, and he still tells them, no, find land. Leave it.
You find out they also have Jack
and, like,
the monkey.
They know that Jack, something's up with
something's
Jack.
Up.
He's not going to be, A, wanting to find land, and B, leave his hat in the water. Mainly the hat.
Because, yeah, Gibbs says, fine, okay, we'll make for port, and he says, I didn't say port, I said land.
Mm-hmm.
And so, anyway, so... Go back to Port Royal, and Will realizes he's offered a deal. Beckett says, well, here's the deal. I need something that Jack Sparrow has. And Will's like, what the hell? And he's like, here, go talk to Sparrow. I want this property, and tell him that in exchange he'll get a pardon and he'll work for the East India Trade Company. Will's like, Jack ain't gonna do that. But he says, well, you better try, because here's the thing. I'm gonna hang... you know, your fiance and potentially you. So he's got these letters in mark that it's got to have Beckett's seal, it's got to have the name signed in, and then whoever has that is pardoned. It is a very flimsy story device, plot device, that is only brought up very sparingly throughout this.
Yeah.
But anyway, so he tells Elizabeth, and we have this interesting little thing because it's a tonal shift, because there's one point he says, I'll go and do this, I'll get this from Jack. And I'll come back, and then we'll get married if you'll still have me. And she says,
if it weren't for these bars, I'd have you already.
And
I like that her dad is right there when she says it, too.
And, like, he reacts. He's, like, kind of, like, oh, my. Anyway, her dad, though, kind of panics.
I'm to find Jack and convince him to return to Port Royal and exchange the charges against us will be dropped.
No, we must find our own avenue to secure your freedom.
Is that a lack of faith in Jack or in me?
That you would risk your life to save sparrows does not mean that he would do the same for anyone else.
Basically says, look, the only pardon that's been presented is just for Jack. Maybe there'll be one for Elizabeth, but I'm sorry, maybe there'll be one for Will, but we don't know for sure if there's one for you. The only sure thing is you gotta go. And she says, well, what if, you know, says, well, I don't understand. What if Will comes back? Says, well, that we don't know that he'll come back. And if he doesn't, then there's nothing left for you here either.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's like, please, I'm your father. Please let me try to save your life. So he tries to smuggle her out.
Mm-hmm.
He himself is caught.
Yep. Oh, he is very much caught. They end up, I think I don't remember the name of this particular character, but he's like a crony of Beckett. Mm-hmm. And he's so creepy.
He is mega creepy.
He's so creepy. Mercer. Yeah.
Mercer.
They end up encountering Mercer, who's just so creepy, and he's killed the captain of the ship. He's gotten that letter that was written to him about smuggling Elizabeth off.
To the king.
To the king. The letter to the king. Which really, I mean, oh, back then, oh my god. They needed email so bad. They just needed to get it in their hands.
To be honest, all of the problems could have been solved if just for email.
I know. A text. Text the king.
Gee whiz. Like, okay.
Your highness, they're wanting to hang my daughter.
The Queen Elizabeth probably has a cell phone.
Queen Elizabeth is so freaking cool. She is so cool.
She is.
She is so old, and she is so cool, and I wish I was, like, half that cool at my age now.
We all do.
So Governor Swan, I wish I had as many corgis as she had, too. That would be great. I love corgis, just so y'all know.
You good?
Corgi nostalgia. Let's keep going. Okay. Anyway, yeah. So,
all right. Governor Swan is pretty much taken into custody, mm-hmm. and Elizabeth gets away.
Pretty much is. He is. The next time we see him, he is in cuffs.
Yeah.
Shackles. Excuse me. He is in shackles.
Elizabeth
gets away.
Gets away. She goes to see
Beckett.
Beckett.
Mm-hmm.
And she has.
He has him at gunpoint.
He does.
I think he likes it just a little bit. He seems to.
He does explain the letters of Mark, how they work. Which is a great exposition.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. Okay. So, he says, you know, was it? She shows up. He says, I wanted to talk to you. I wanted to, you know, negotiate or something. He says, I'm listening. And then she pulls the gun. I'm listening intently. And so, she's like, here's the thing. I have... Because I know what it is. I'm sorry. Earlier in his conversation with Will says he's not going to give you the pearl. And he's like, I don't want the ship. I want the compass. And they don't know what the compass does. As far as mm-hmm. we know, all it does is go to Isla de Muerta. So Elizabeth tells Beckett, says, hey, here's the thing. I have seen the Isla de Muerta. I've been there. You don't want none of that.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, oh.
I don't have any interest in cursed gold.
Yeah.
Which shows that he knows exactly what she's talking about. And he knows exactly a lot of the stuff that's going on in the Caribbean.
So a lot of the lessons they learned in the last movie is how valuable information Elizabeth is coming to terms with the fact that she doesn't have a lot of valuable information mm-hmm. as such. So
she thought she did, but now she does not.
Yeah. So her only plan is to escape.
Mm-hmm.
So she takes the letters of Mark that have the seal, but not the name. They're not filled out properly. Anyway, so she leaves. She's a stowaway. She stowaways on a cargo ship.
Mm-hmm.
Dressed up as a guy.
She uses her wedding gown to manipulate them mm-hmm. into thinking, A, the ship is haunted, because they're sailors. They're very, very superstitious. Like, if you did anything on a ship at that in that particular point in history, mm-hmm. your superstition level was, like, at near 100%. Yes. And to be fair, I don't blame them. Being out on the water, that's weird.
That's how mermaids came to be. They would look at manatees.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, I want to fuck that.
That's I don't know if that was the thought, but anyway. But I mean, anyway, yeah, she uses her wedding dress to create the illusion that the ship is haunted, and then she creates a whole setup where she knocks down a lantern and it lights a design that she's made on the ground, and it spells out Tortuga, and so they're thinking that they should go to Tortuga.
Mm-hmm.
So that allows her to go there.
In the meantime, Will is following a trail of his own to try to track down Jack.
Captain Jack Sparrow. Where's my four doubloons? Thought he was dead.
Singapore, that's what I heard. Drunk with a smile on his face. Sure as a tide. Jack Sparrow, turn up in Singapore.
He runs into the prostitutes.
Yep.
One from them. He says, Jack Sparrow!
I haven't seen him in a month.
When you find him, will you give him a message?
And she slaps him, just like in the first movie. Does it work? Hey.
No, not really. It is. Yeah.
It's pandering. It doesn't add anything. Mm-mm. It's like, hey, remember this other movie? We didn't want to go through that trouble. Mm-hmm. But remember, we're just going to keep reminding you that this movie exists. Because all that does is make me want to watch that movie.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, So then he eventually finds a man with a delightful accent.
Yeah.
Can I say about Jack Sparrow? But this island, just south of the Straits, where I trade spice for delicious long pork. Cannot say about Jack, but you find a ship there. A ship with black sails.
And that's when those of us who know what long pork is, we go, oh. And for those of you that do not know what long pork is, that's human.
That's peoples.
That's human.
Yeah.
They eats people. They's cannibals.
Is cannibals. Cannibalism, a little bit. So, but he says that, I don't know about Jack, but I know that I saw the ship with black sails.
Mm-hmm.
Which leads Will to this island. And he sees
I think it's
ship.
Funny that guy that takes him out there, he's like, I'm not going up there. You're on your own, man. This is as close as I'm getting.
Yep.
And he just has to just get out and swim and hope that there will be a way off. I mean, the Pearl is there, but it's beached. So it's like, how are you going to get it off?
So Will goes looking. In the meantime, bizarrely, Pentel and Rigetti,
mm-hmm.
familiar faces I'm happy to see, are in a longboat with the dog and the keys.
Yeah.
The dog being there in the longboat with his island. Does it work?
No.
Nay.
No. One thing I both like and do not like is what they do with Rigetti's character. They grow his character a little bit. There's no real need for it, mm-hmm. so it's kind of like, eh. Why is it here? But they start making Rigetti be kind of a little bit existential and worrying about his future and where he'll go after he dies and start to be, like, weirdly knowledgeable about all these things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's sitting there reading the Bible and he's got it upside down. And I love how Pentel's like, it's upside down. And he says, you get credit for trying.
It's the Bible.
I'm like,
you get credit
yeah, it's
for
the
trying.
Bible. You get credit for trying. And it's like, okay, I mean, that's funny. And then he knows about the black spot, and, like, in later times, he knows about some mythologies and whatnot, and you're like, okay, where'd this come from? It's fun.
Now, the practical reason for them to be there is they decide they're going to salvage the Pearl, and they're trying to get it, and that's the only reason it's made ready by the time that it needs to be.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, Will's looking through the jungle, and he is quickly subdued and captured by an indigenous tribe of peoples.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever he's taken hostage to their base camp, he finds their leader is none other than the one and only Captain Jack Sparrow.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
I love that. From what I understand, like, the scene has dialogue, but also Johnny Depp just did a lot of random, we're just going to throw in a bunch of words here, make up words, mm-hmm. and it'll be Jack Sparrow's version of how he sort of understands their language.
Whatever this tribal just, language
yeah.
is.
Also, something I learned, that scepter thingy he has, that fluffy scepter thing,
mm-hmm.
that actually belonged to a friend of his who visited the set, and he happened to have this thing with him. For whatever reason, I don't remember why they said he had that thing with him, but Johnny looked at it and went, I need that. And so he let him borrow it, and then his friend actually made them several other copies of this, so they would have that. Jack wears all these rings.
I know, I have some of them.
Tons of rings. So that one that's purple, that big, thick purple one, that is a Greco-Roman ring that is 2,400 years old, or it was until somebody stole it. So what they have is copies, and apparently that's like the only one in existence, or the only... All they have now
are the copies.
Are the copies.
I have his emerald. I have the emerald with the silver.
That one's one he got. I think that was just a ring that was just his.
Nice.
that he just wanted as a part of his character.
Well, he is somehow the chief. Now, it stands to reason, somebody has brought this up. In the first movie, he's like, and then they made me the chief. Do you think that's why he went to that island?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Now, of course, this time it doesn't go so well, because you find out he tells them to, like, take him, like, you know, it's implied, take him away, put him with the other prisoners.
Mm-hmm.
And then he whispers, save me. And...
You know, actually, no, hold on. Remember, they were looking for land. He literally, there's no heading, they're just looking for land. Mm-hmm. So I feel like that doesn't necessarily have anything to do with the other, the then they made me their chief thing. I think that the...
It's plausible.
It is plausible. But with the way that they ultimately behave, where they're like, they're going to make him the chief and then they're going to eat him.
Well, yeah, we're going to...
You feel like that would happen.
So, yeah, Will finds himself in a bone cage. There's two bone cages and he's with Gibbs. Gibbs mm-hmm. explains that these tribesmen believe that Jack is a god mm-hmm. and the ultimate freedom for him would be to... roast him and free him from his flesh
body. Fleshly bonds.
Flesh prison. And they're going to eat him.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, well, what about the rest of the crew? And he's like, these cages, which you realize are made of bones.
Weren't built until after we got here.
I've seen the cages. I've been next to the cages.
Oh, cool.
They're, you know, sort of a foamy kind of thing, but it is kind of interesting. They're pretty sturdy.
Yeah.
They were on the Backlot movie tour for a very long time.
Oh, cool.
I
remember watching a thing about how they did those and that the actors were like, these were interesting to act in.
They're not as big. Because
you have, like, multiple people in there running and you got this all, like, between your legs and that cannot be comfortable.
They're not as big as they look.
Yeah, they look big, but they must not be.
No, and the things, it must have been incredibly, like, because you don't think about it, but, like, Gibbs and Turner are, like, big dudes, you know? Anyway, so... I have seen the bow spirit. I think I actually touched the bow spirit of the pearl.
Oh, that's cool.
And I also touched Davy Jones' organ. And then a cast member asked me to please not do that anymore.
Oh, no.
So.
You were illegal touching.
I was illegally touching things, which sounds way worse as I said it out loud. So, moving on. Anyway.
They did not have your consent. Clearly, you were told to stop.
Aw,
well, he didn't cause too much damage.
They have to get out of these cages. There's two cages. One is filled with Marty and Cotton and Gibbs and Will. And the other cage...
is filled with a bunch of random guys.
So, what do you think is going to happen?
I think the random guys are going to make it. I want to know their stories.
Oh, no.
I want to follow the stories of these guys that start this... sort of dickish race up the side of a cliff.
That's okay. So yeah, they have to swing the cages to get to the side of the cliff and then they grab on.
Okay. So remember we commented on this earlier.
The
piece of music that they play with that is so annoying because it's this sort of carnival fair sort of music.
It's a waltz.
It's a waltz, but it's a carnival waltz. It's the kind of music that they play in, like, the fun house or with the carousel or something like that. It's the type of instruments that they play with the waltz.
And it's for the first time you see you hear music that is just...
It does not fit.
The tone
There's no
is
reason
way
for
off.
It to be there. And it is entirely their way of being like, this is supposed to be funny, guys.
We're going to make it silly.
This is silly.
So they're both...
Kids will like this.
The cages get on the side of the... on, like, the rock face. And you see, like, at one point they're climbing, and one of them says something to the effect of, yo, Will says, we'll need every hand. And then somebody else says, no, actually, you would just need, like, 5 or 6 people.
Mm-hmm.
And then they realize, for no reason, now it's a race. And then, as if you needed a reason to feel better, I guess, about these people dying, there's a tribesman that goes across the bridge, and they're like, everybody, we have to stop, otherwise we'll get found out. And then the other cage...
Mm-hmm. They keep going, and they're And what they end up grabbing a snake and instead of a vine, and then they freak out, and everybody kind of loses their cool, and it causes them to fall off of the... off the cliff, and the rope snaps, and they fall to their doom, and that alerts the tribesmen that everybody's trying to escape.
So the tribesman goes back to the camp, where Jack Sparrow is about to be roasted, and he's already, like, you trying to stall it, and then he's like, okay, what are you waiting for? Go get them. And so now he has to get out, and there's mm-hmm. a whole hilarious, wacky thing where somebody throws fruit at him, and then he's got this big steak strapped to his back, and now it looks like he's like a kebab, and... then he falls out of the off the cliff, and it's this whole thing with just, it's a wacky, crazy adventure.
So, something that I am going to comment on, something that I learned in doing some research on this, is that when they realized, we're talking about this cash cow, when they realized that this was an actual cash cow and that they were going to get to make another set of movies with this, they put all this planning into place, and then they went to the writers and they're like, hey, we'll write a pirate movie. Okay. And then the writers were like, I don't know what to write. We pulled out all of our best stuff on the first movie. And so they, like, scheduling had happened. Like, all this stuff for the production process was done, ready to go. They were, like, they were already in casting mode for the new people. And the script still was not finished. And what was happening then is it was then giving the director and some of the other creative team, they then didn't have a script to go off of, and they were just trying to kind of come up with stuff. And so they were coming up with all these little sequences. I don't know which of the sequences were the ones that ended up being used and how much of that was in the script and how much kind of got married into the script. That little bit, though, with the whole kebab and all, that definitely feels kind of like a random sequence that came up with while they were trying to figure out the script.
This explains some stuff.
Has a disjointed quality to it.
The first three IMBD trivia things
are
all about how things were improvised or made up by the cast.
See, I haven't even read that. This was from a totally different set of research that I did. I think that's funny.
When we do these, we do research, but we try not to pull from the same wells. And true. So, just sort of a little peek behind the curtain, as it were.
Behind the scenes. It's a behind the scenes of how we behind the scenes.
But I mean, if it's just, it's a ridiculous thing, and yeah, okay, it had its moments, but it was clearly trying to pull from the well that was the sword fights and the town being ransacked from the first movie. That was not this. I don't care what happens. What has happened now is my people, the stakes have not been set, and they're already scattered to the winds. Mm-hmm. Elizabeth's off God knows where. Will, you know, is in the situation with the cages. Jack might be roasted. I don't care about this wacky, funny chase scene. Mm-mm. One thing, he comes across this stuff that's clearly, like, the cannibals have taken over, and he finds the East India Trading Company logo, and I was like,
that really doesn't do anything, does it?
Doesn't go anywhere.
No, it doesn't.
It goes nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great, fine. So then,
I think it's to remind you that, oh, they have a far reach. We know that already.
Yeah. So, they manage to, the crew is like, okay, we're ready to go. Patel and Rigetti have mysteriously managed to get the ship at least somewhat into the, you know, out of the surf. They're like, okay, let's go, let's go, let's go. So now they're reunited. Will says, we can't leave without Jack and that compass. And then you see Jack running, and then the cannibals are behind him, and he's, time to go.
Remember, Jack, they would use that clip in the trailer all the time, Orlando Bloom going, time to go. And then, you know, dipping out of frame, and then everything's, they're doing more, crashing and banging, and it was fun until we watched the movie.
Then, of course, Jack gets on the Pearl and then calls out, remember, this is the day that you always
remember.
Wave hits him, and he's something,
Captain Bear's Sparrow.
Does it work?
Not really.
Nay.
Because they did not know him as Captain Jack Sparrow. This was always something that he would be using in reference to various authority figures and government officials that kept not calling him by the name he preferred. Those people thought of him as their king.
Once again, it's fan service for people that didn't know what their fans wanted. All right, so now Will says, here's the deal. I need you to go, and I need this compass to go to Beckett. And he's not totally down to clown on it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm trying to think, I know what it is. He has to, I'm trying to think what the scenario is, because they had to get into Jones. They have to find Jones.
Mm-hmm.
So, at the beginning of the movie, Jack has this drawing of the key.
Mm-hmm.
So, he realizes that Beckett wants the compass because he wants to find the dead man's chest.
Mm-hmm.
The dead man's chest of Davy Jones. And so, there's a little bit, I'm trying to think if this is actually put out here yet. No, it's not till later. So what we're going to do is we need the chest, and that'll appease, you know, that if we need to get it before Beckett does.
Mm-hmm.
So Will says, here's the deal. Essentially, I think what it is,
because it's, because he visits.
Okay. So after,
they visit Teodama.
All right, so after Will sets off, before he finds him, the Pearl needs to find, because Jack doesn't want to go out in the ocean, open ocean. They go into what is clearly some kind of bayou. Now, this is something I didn't realize because I've gone to Disney World. I've never been to Disneyland. In the beginning of the Disneyland Pirates of the Caribbean experience, you go through sort of a bayou where you pass...
It's the New Orleans, kind of the New Orleans Square thing.
And
I think it's because you told me, that they didn't have a New Orleans Square at Disney World. They have one at Disneyland, and I think it's funny because Disney World is in Orlando, Florida, which is not that far from New Orleans.
Biggest problem is it's too close to New Orleans for people not to know that New Orleans is nothing like. Does not look like that. Yeah. It's awful. I don't like New Orleans. That's my own personal preference because it's gross. But
I enjoy it for its merits, but I enjoy it for certain reasons, but... I feel like the sort of fantasy version that's in Disneyland, probably more fun. probably.
So they go to find this, it's a voodoo priestess named Tia Dalma. Tia Dalma I like.
Yeah, she's cool.
She's
They had a hard time, they were having issues casting her though, because with the writing and everything, they wrote it as this sort of fortune teller sort of thing, and the argument was, oh no, we didn't mean for you to be using that scene to be casting with, but then they're like, well then why was it there when we're in the midst of casting? Why is the scene not written? So there were a lot of arguments, and what I was thinking was, like, I feel really sorry for these actresses that were initially being pulled in for this and were reading these scenes that were like, you didn't have a whole lot to go off of other than, okay, I'm playing a fortune teller, cool. And then they get told, no, we got to redo this again. And so either they got called back in or maybe they didn't. I just feel kind of sorry for them because their time kind of got wasted.
Yeah. All right. So Naomi Harris, who plays Tia Dalma, she's a new character and a very interesting one at that. She has what I loved about the first movie with the character. She has this thing where she does not divulge information, and it's very subtle, and she's a little bit out there, but she has no fucks to give. Fun fact, Tia Dalma looks messed up. She's got that messed up teeth and face. Naomi Harris is shockingly gorgeous.
Yeah, I mean, she is really pretty.
Shockingly. She was originally dismissed because it was decided she was too young, and then they were like, no, she can play this. She's gonna be fine.
The way they dress her up is they give her those dreads, they give her that makeup, they give her kind of like this the icky looking teeth, the black, not icky looking, just blackened,
like some kind of she tattoo. Has
the tattoos. They actually kind of put like some black kind of around her mouth, almost looks like it's stained,
but she still it doesn't cover up her beauty at all.
Because she looks fantastic, but it gives her this sort of ageless quality where it's like you just can't quite tell how old she is. Which is good, and it suits her.
The eyes are where you get it most. Yeah. Like, she just has this really big sparkle to her eyes, and it's just, you can paint her up all you want, but you're not going to hide pretty. I wonder if
they put those contacts that they did for some of the other pirates.
That's a fun little aside. The costume department made tinted contacts because it's due to reason that pirates would have, their eyesight would have adjusted.
Well, they actually made some tinted ones specifically for Johnny that were actually sunglasses contacts.
Yep.
That he could wear out when they were in the sun, and it would allow him to keep having his eyes open.
Literally what I just said.
Well, no, actually they did multiple types of contacts for the movie. They did Johnny's contacts, which were sunglasses contacts. Then they had some that were just a little bit off color for Barbossa, so that he looked like he wasn't a particularly healthy person, but not jaundiced. And then they had those ones that they put in Pintel that are just so yellow. And then for Rigetti to be his different various eyeball ones. They had one that was hard, and it gave him that bulge sort of effect. And then one that just looked like a wooden eye in his
And from what I understand, not comfortable.
No.
They go and they find Tia Dalma. Jack really has not revealed what the problem is. And you find out a couple of things. You find out that... I think this is probably why Tia Dalma's scenes are my favorite in this movie. Is because there's a lot of subtle things that are explained later that do pay off. For example, there is a locket that's a heart that's almost a crab. At one point, because they want to get her to help. And so in payment... They give her an undead monkey. They give her the monkey. And she immediately releases him, and the monkey goes and messes with a pair of boots that we don't really get to see.
Yeah.
But Teodama, she does have... It's clear that she and Jack have a history, and it's very unclear as to what it is. At first, you kind of assume, I mean, maybe it's a romantic thing, but no. It's like it could have been, but it might not have been. But she says, you know, the compass that you bartered from me, she's the source of that compass.
Mm-hmm.
And so she says, well, you can't figure out what you want. And, you know, what's, and she realizes something's wrong, and she says, let me see your hand. And that's when it's revealed he has been given the black spot.
Mm-hmm.
So what she does is she offers him a jar of dirt.
David Jones cannot make port. Cannot step on land but once every 10 years. Land is where you are safe, Jack Sparrow. And so you will carry land with you.
Dirt. This is a jar of dirt.
Yes.
Is the jar of dirt going to help?
If you don't want it, give it back.
No.
Then it helps.
For some reason, that is a sound used frequently on TikTok. I do not... I'm not one of those TikTok people. I just get on there every now and then when I'm bored. And I've seen that show up so many times with people using that as their background noise for various things.
Nice.
Yeah. And I hear it and I'm like, huh, that brings back memories. And then I move on.
She tells him.
Oh, I forgot about the fact at the beginning, like right when everybody comes in, she looks at Will and she's like, you have a touch of destiny about you.
Uh-huh.
And you get the idea that she can see that there's more going on with Will and his future than any of us know.
That's how they end up. The jar of dirt
is
given because, as Teodama puts it, says that Davy Jones cannot touch land but once every 10 years. Now, I really expected a payoff. Somehow this dirt was going to pay off. And I guess it does, but not in a satisfying way.
No.
But, anyway.
I mean, we'll see how it's being used later. But, yeah, it doesn't ever really do anything to affect Davy Jones at all.
And it's Teodama that tells them what the key is, because they ask her what the key is. She then proceeds to tell them a tale.
Your key go to a chest, and it is what lay inside the chest you seek.
What is inside?
You know I've David Jones, yes? A man of the sea, a great sailor, until he ran afoul of that which vexed all men.
What vexes old men?
What indeed?
A woman.
A woman. He fell in love.
No. I heard it was the sea he fell in love with.
Same story, different versions, and all are true. See, it was a woman. As changing and harsh and untamable as the sea. He never stopped loving her. But the pain it caused him was too much to live with. But not enough to cause him to die.
What exactly did he put into the chest?
Him heart. It was not worth feeling what small, fleeting joy life brings. And so, he carved out him heart. Lock it away in a chest and hide the chest from the world.
Basically, she says that the key goes to the chest. So the only way they can't really beat, they can't bargain with Beckett. What they have to do is they have to beat him and get to their own ends. They have to succeed him or get to his goal before he can. So now they know they're looking for the heart of Davy Jones. They're looking for this chest. Because Teodama did point out, you know, he cut out his heart and put it in the chest. And now they need to find the Dutchman. So they find a wrecked ship. And Jack sends Will to go and, quote, settle his debts. So he goes and finds some sailors that are near death. And sure enough, these fishy-looking gnarly dudes show up. They're the crew of the Flying Dutchman. And Davy Jones himself comes out.
Mm-hmm.
As played by?
Bill Nighy. I love Bill Nighy.
He's just so cool.
Well, he actually didn't get started acting until he was well into, like, his 40s.
Nice.
And it was, I think it was just one of those things that he just always wanted to do. And he just started pursuing it and became Bill Nighy. Now, it didn't hurt that he was in England and that he actually had that sort of character style to him, which works well for character actors versus, like, those of us that are a little bit younger. And it's like, you guys are a dime a dozen. We want the ones, you're a random middle-aged guy that fits this particular character. Okay, you'll work. So, but I love the way he doesn't perform scenes or deliver lines boring.
No, he doesn't. It's very dynamic.
It's very dynamic. And actually, I remember listening to something that they were commenting on that they thought he was going to come in and be this kind of scary dude. And he doesn't. He actually plays it with a little bit of wry humor.
Yes, that's exactly how I would describe it, yeah.
Like when he's saying about, you know, he's talking to Bootstrap and he's like, you know, you sent your son to find... your son was sent to find land. What does he say? He's talking about sent to find land, but...
He says, yeah, you're free to leave whenever you want. Better when we make port.
Uh-huh. And better the next time we make port. And he just spits out those lines and then he laughs.
And one thing he did repeatedly improvise was the noise, like the little thing. He comes out. And you could tell right away,
He laughs a lot, too. Like, it's evil laugh, but it's also like he finds humor in a lot of things. It's just not necessarily the kind of things we'd find humor in.
In the movie, Davy Jones is a bitter, jaded dude.
Yeah.
And he does not appreciate any levity. In fact, whenever he gets Will, he's confused. He says, you're neither dead nor dying while you're here. And Will says exactly what Jack told him to.
Mm-hmm.
Jack Sparrow sent me to settle his debts. And immediately he's like, what do you say? And so, anyway, there's a wonderful thing where at the Pearl, they've doused all the lamps to hide.
Mm-hmm.
And then Jack is looking at the telescope.
And Davy Jones just turns and he sees him in the telescope. And then when Jack lowers the telescope, there's Davy Jones right in front of his face. There.
And so they have this conversation where he says, you know, you're here. Here we go. It's time. And he says, no, well, you've already got a soul over there. And he says, one soul is not equal to another. And he says, well, have I mentioned that Will? And he says, he's in love and he's betrothed. And that angers Davy Jones. Because now he's like, yeah, and you find out more, which I think this is one of the times that's really well done. It's layered just the right amount. Because you don't know why he's just a bitter, jaded dude. And then you find out there's something about Will being in a relationship, this betrothed, separated by the sea love that affects Jones. So he leaves. So the bargain is struck. It's simple. You have 3 days where the Kraken will not search for you. And
to find yourself 99 souls.
99 souls. And he says, and he's going to leave Will aboard the Dutchman.
As a good faith payment.
So where do they go?
They go to Tortuga. Meanwhile, Will is on the Flying Dutchman. Mm-hmm. Sort of stuck there.
They look to sign up some people.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, Jack is desperately trying to get the compass to work because he can't figure out what it is he wants to do.
I know what I want.
Gibbs is signing up these guys. And who should turn up? But, okay, Elizabeth is there with this crew. Mm-hmm. You know, she has managed to stow away. She's convinced them to go to Tortuga. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, signing up, there is one familiar face that turns up. James Norrington.
Except, on this particular occasion, James Norrington does not look like the James Norrington we were used to. This one is a scraggledy, bearded, dirty, you know...
He has fallen, yes. And
he has fallen. And very if you're talking bitter, about bitter and jaded.
Yeah. He apparently has tried to follow them and all that stuff. He almost caught them, but then there was a hurricane briefly mentioned in the beginning. He tried to sail through it. He has lost his command. He's lost his status. He obviously, you know, didn't have Elizabeth. He has lost everything.
Mm-hmm.
So now he's just sort of a F it, you know, I'll do this, that, or the other. So he does sign up to be part of this crew, but there's this, he's drunk and he's trying to pick a fight with Jack.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, a brawl, barroom brawl ensues. Elizabeth sees this. And while this is all happening, Elizabeth is actually protecting a very drunk James.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got some really good music that I like.
Mm-hmm.
The whole time Jack's, like, trying to find a hat. I don't really care about that.
That whole bit was unnecessary.
I liked the barroom brawl.
The barroom brawl is great. And, I mean, I understand that they had to do something with Jack while this was happening. And it makes sense that Jack wouldn't necessarily actually get involved in the barroom brawl. He would be doing something sort of, he'd be kind of doing a side quest. Mm-hmm. That is intermittent with the brawl, but somehow he is escaping from all of it. However, the whole finding a hat thing, no.
Yeah.
There was only one hat for Jack Sparrow. Literally, actually, the costumer, Penny Rose, who I've watched a lot of her interviews, she said that she made several hats for Johnny to try as Jack Sparrow. She made several hats, kind of laid them out, and he went in, and the first one he picked up, and the very last one that he decided he would want was what would ultimately be Jack Sparrow's hat. And it's this simple leather tricorn. And so she said for that one, she would have actually made other leather hats in the movie, but she couldn't now because she felt like, because this is Johnny's hat and this is Jack Sparrow's hat, it could be the only leather hat in the movie. And they actually made rubber versions of it so that way whenever it had to be in the water, it could just float and they could just, you know, fish it back out again easily. There's only one Jack Sparrow hat, so that was kind of not necessary.
All right, so what winds up happening, Elizabeth finds Norrington. She's like, okay, it's going to be okay. And so she realizes because of Norrington that Jack is there.
Mm-hmm.
So it does have a great, you know, moment. Captain Sparrow!
Come to join me, crew lad. Welcome aboard.
I'm here to find the man I love.
I'm deeply flattered, son, but my first and only love is the sea.
And she's like, I mean Will Turner.
So, because she has...
And then he looks at her and he's like...
You know, these clothes do not flatter you at all. It should be a dress or nothing. I happen to have no dress in my cabin.
Jack.
He is delightful.
Okay. See, coming out of Jack's mouth, it's actually okay.
It works.
Because that's the kind of thing he's going to say anyway. Coming out of some of those other guys' mouths, No, then it just gets creepy.
So, okay. So, during this point, Elizabeth is trying to figure out where Will is. All she knows is that he went searching for Jack.
Uh-huh.
And now here's Jack, but there's no Will. What is it? And so he says, well, what do you know about Davy Jones? And she says nothing. He's like, okay, yeah, this is going to, like, you want to find wherever this chest is. Because that'll help. And so, but it's because of this, we're now told what the chest is.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they were kind of given a bit more, you know, it's the still beating heart of Davy Jones. And anyway, so.
I just realized he literally does the same thing with Will in this movie as he was planning to do in the last movie. He's just, you're my placeholder, you're my bait, until such time as I can actually kill the one that I'm after. And hopefully they don't kill you in the process.
I mean, if it ain't broke.
Yeah. It works. Okay. I think he basically was like, well, the plan didn't work last time. Let's try it again.
So, while Elizabeth joins the crew along with Norrington and Jack,
mm-hmm.
and they know that now Elizabeth is able to work the compass because Elizabeth's mm-hmm. motives are not completely corrupted. So where Jack is so confused as to what he wants to do and what's going to be beneficial for him. Because for the first time probably in his life, those two things are conflicting.
Mm-hmm.
So, here we are, back in the Dutchman.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Will is trying to figure out, you know, the best way to carry on. So, he's part of the crew. Somebody says, Mr. Turner, do something. He thinks he's talking to them. So, then there's two Mr. Turners. There's Bootstrap and there's Will. And they, you know...
They run up these two separate stairs. They go to the same... They go to the same line, and they're both trying to undo mm-hmm. it, and I think they're trying to raise a cannon or lower a cannon or something like that. Whatever the case is it's real heavy.
Bootstrap is shocked.
Bootstrap, yeah, when he realizes who it is.
And because of that, he lets go of the rope, and there's a crash. And the cannon falls. And somebody has to be punished.
Mm-hmm.
And they assume it's the new guy, because why did you leave your post? We weren't talking to you, not realizing he was responding to his own name. So, he's gonna get 40 lashes. And Bootstrap says, no, I'll take it. I'll do it. And it's like, why? He's like, because it's my son. It's either going to be you or the bosun.
Mm-hmm.
And the bosun's
particularly cruel.
Yeah.
Because he's like, he prides himself on cleaving flesh from bone. And,
with every swim.
Because Will's all pissed.
Yeah, well.
Which is understandable, especially when he realizes who it is. But when you consider what he could have gotten.
Will's mad because he's mad.
Yeah.
Big strong brawn. He's mad because he's mad. I'm sorry, but there you go. But anyway, so here we go. So now he's talking to him. He says, well, once you've made a deal with Jones, there's no getting out. And he's like, I didn't make any deal. And his dad's like, well, then, okay, let's get you out of here.
Why are you here?
This is not a party boat. So, okay. So while they're there, he witnesses the crew playing a game called Liar's Dice. We should explain what Liar's Dice is and how it is played.
Okay. So you have your cups, you have your dice. You put your dice into the cups, you shake it up, and you dump it out with your cup on top of the dice so that no one can see it. You check underneath the cup and you see what numbers or what numbers are facing up on your dice, what you've rolled. And then you can either say what you have or you can claim that you have more. And
you can claim that there are more on the table because you are making assumptions and bids based on what you have and what you think the others might have. And the catch is you have to keep increasing the bid.
So now, there comes a point where it's very clear you are lying.
Now, here's the thing, though. If you are called a liar, then if you're actually lying, you lose one of your dice. If you are not lying, then you get a dice from the person that called you a liar.
Nice.
Now, the way that they play it here is very confusing because at no point is it explained.
No.
And then you find out they're bidding years of servitude.
We should play Liar's Dice sometime.
We should.
I don't have one.
I feel like just the two of us would get pretty boring.
It would. We'd find some people.
Anyway, so he says, you can bid anything. Yeah, you can. And anybody can be challenged. So Will, big strong brawn, decides he's gonna...
Yeah, I will agree with you on that one. He very rash... Instead of saying big strong brawn, let's just say Rash Turner.
Rash Turner.
Because that's what he does. It's not the big strong brawn thing. It's the I'm reacting without thinking it through.
Here's the thing, though.
And it takes that's what causes his father to jump in there, too.
It takes a minute to understand, really. And I'm kind of backpedaling. He doesn't want to play. He just wants to know where the key is. Because he says, well, my soul versus this key. And he says, how do you know about the key? And it's like, that's not part of the game. Do you know where it is? And he shows it. That's all he wanted. And at one point he even says, he's like, it's not too late to walk away. Now, what isn't thought out is, how were you going to stop the game at that point? You didn't think it through. And unfortunately, I fully believe Jones was going to call Will a liar, and Will wasn't. He was still in the right. He could have gotten out with the key scot-free. Now, that's not to say that Jones would have hunted him down and killed him immediately after leaving, but he could have won. But his father impulsively jumps in.
Well, look at where he gets it from.
I see that.
And also...
My voice feels shredded.
Look at... Remember Bootstrap sent off the piece of gold to Will, which could be considered kind of a rash decision. Potentially.
Potentially, yeah.
So maybe it just kind of runs in the family of we're going to act, not necessarily think these things through all the way without a full plan. We're going to get a great idea, but we're not going to have a full plan.
The original bet was I get the key if I win. Jones gets the key. So if Will wins, Will gets the key. If Jones wins, he gets Will's soul. However, Bootstrap intervenes and matches Will's bid. Or your wager, I guess. And then before Jones can call Will a liar, Bill ups the bid. And forces, you know, in this insane amount, and it forces Davy Jones to call him a liar, which of course he is, in the game. The father pretty much sacrificed himself, and it was needless. Okay, so here's the thing. So Liar's Dice is done. Mm-hmm. He knows where the key is. So he's free to go. But of course, they're in the middle of the ocean. Mm-hmm. And Will really wants that key. So he does manage to steal the key.
This is where we find out a little bit more about Davy Jones. That he's got a lost love. That his lost love is somehow associated with this this little music box that he has in there. And that becomes kind of the Davy Jones motif.
So pretty. He has this locket?
It's not a locket. It's a little music box.
Oh, is it?
Yeah,
it's a little silver heart?
Yeah, the little silver like heart crab. That looks kind of crab-like. It's uh-huh. It's a little music box.
Will does notice it as being odd because it really doesn't fit in with things, but it is noteworthy. Fun thing about the Davy Jones's organ.
Hmm.
The pipe organ that he plays is, you know, like I said, I've touched it.
Mm-hmm.
It has no keys.
Oh.
There are no keys. That's all CGI.
Oh. Really?
Yep.
Well, okay, hold on, though, because I was watching something about this, and yeah, all of the tentacle-y stuff, that is CGI, obviously. But what they did have as a reference, they did have an actual organ player play that
right.
that they could then use as a reference for the keys and all.
But Bill Nighy?
Mm-hmm.
In the costume?
There
are no keys.
Technically not costume.
You know what I mean.
Tracksuit.
The ball suit.
Motion capture tracksuit.
Ball suit.
Technically ball suit, yes.
Covered in balls.
Actually, this one wasn't covered in balls. This one, they do the balls in the studio.
Okay. That is pretty interesting. Actually, sorry, I was just trying to put that down.
Actually, something that is interesting to go back to Bill Nighy, for his performance, he has to wear the gray tracksuit with all the tracking dots on his face and everything, but something they did to help themselves, and I think it helped Bill a little bit too, is they did put a little bit of makeup around his lips and around his eyes. Mm-hmm. So he's got kind of squid eye makeup and squid lip makeup. So that way, if they needed to insert any of his actual performance, for any of the mm-hmm. actual footage of his performance, they would have that option. They said they actually didn't have to, that the quality of their animation was so good they didn't need it.
Mm-hmm.
And then another thing that I have loved for 15 years since I saw this, or however many years it's been since I saw this one, the texture of Davy Jones's skin is from a dirty coffee cup.
Coffee cup.
Which I love.
I love
a dirty styrofoam coffee cup. We gotta preface that they found in the trash. And they were like, I wonder what this would look like. And they kind of did the little scanner thing, and mm-hmm. it popped up on the computer, and they're like, and started messing with it, and it became squid skin, or octopus skin, because he's an octopus, not a squid.
That's notable. So everybody in the crew is slowly becoming somewhat nautical-based, mm-hmm. either whether that be plant life, fish, or just, you know, like barnacles and whatnot, which I guess mm-hmm. is also like a sea life.
I mean, if it's under the water, it's sea life.
Yeah.
That's not entirely true.
Jones has a peg leg, but he has a lobster claw, and his face is almost entirely an octopus.
Mm.
But okay, so Will manages to get away in a lifeboat, and can I just say real quick, what was really interesting, in the first movie you had the Black Pearl, which had a really distinctive characteristic design, mm-hmm. whereas you had the Dauntless and the Interceptor were both this very, like, you could see, like, the British Navy kind of coming out in that. The Dutchman is a design all unto its own, and mm-hmm. it's beautiful. And you'll see that later, and we'll get into it the next film, which we'll get into more, like, the actual ship stuff, but the Haipang, I think that's how you say it.
Haipang?
Haipang. It's Xiaofang ship.
Xiaofang, yeah.
Xiaofang?
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 Xiaofang. Xiaofang.
Xiaofang?
Xiaofang.
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 Xiaofang. And the actor is played by Chow Yun-fat. See, I can't say anything.
All this is third movie stuff. But the Dutchman itself is a really beautiful, very intimidating ship. And I love the way the sails look.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so Will leaves the Dutchman with the key. Now, it doesn't take long for Jones to find out what's happened, both in what's missing, who is missing.
I know that... Okay, so Will gets off. And it then leads over to Elizabeth.
Wait a minute. Before he leaves the Dutchman,
mm-hmm.
he promises to save...
his father.
He says... yeah, his father gives him a knife.
Mm-hmm.
And he says he'll take this with the promise that he will be back to free him.
Mm-hmm.
And all he knows is that for him to go, Jones has got to be slain. And the only way for Jones to be slain is to
stab the heart.
Stab the heart.
Yeah. And he's got to find... and then he has to find the chest that goes with the key and all of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so... so he escapes... and it cuts back over to, I believe it's back to Jack and Elizabeth and Norrington.
Yeah, that's where the whole Tortuga thing happens.
And, no.
It's right there.
That's where the Tortuga thing happens? Mm-hmm. After he escapes?
After he escapes.
What?
Yep. So then Jack, and so they realize that the compass, okay.
So at what point is then he going, when are they on the ship?
All right.
And we have this little tete-a-tete between her and Jack that then is the allusion to them having a thing.
That's coming up. So, okay. So, Will's picked up by a passing fisher boat. The same boat that used to have Elizabeth leaving Tortuga. And Will recognizes the wedding dress.
Mm-hmm.
And, anyway, it turns out the Kraken has been sent after Will
mm-hmm.
to destroy this ship.
Mm-hmm.
And... Jones thinks that that has been accomplished because the Kraken does destroy the ship. Now, Will's the only survivor, so he knows what the Kraken is capable of.
Mm-hmm.
And that's important. So then later, let's see, Will finds refuge on the ship, but is destroyed by the Kraken. The Black Pearl sails to Isla Cruces, where the chest is buried.
But
Jack
between,
and Elizabeth and Norrington recover it.
In between there, though, there mm-hmm. is a conversation between Elizabeth and Jack where she's like, you know...
Okay.
What kind of choices are you going to make, Jack? Are you going to do the right thing or not?
Okay. Elizabeth, before they leave Tortuga,
mm-hmm.
Elizabeth is given... Jack realizes the compass will work for her.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the best way to save Will? It says, the best thing is not to find Will. The best way is to find something to save Will. So that's what Elizabeth wants most. That's where now you have that we have our heading
mm-hmm.
clip comes from. And it takes them to Isla Cruces.
Mm-hmm.
Now, on the way there... Elizabeth is kind of feeling a little bit sorry for herself.
Mm-hmm.
One line that does kind of bug me, she's like, I just thought I'd be married by now. I'm so ready to be married. And Jack, and it's just, it's not the sentiment, it's the wording.
Mm-hmm.
Because it leaves Jack open to start kind of flirting with her. And she's like, no. And they have this, like you said, a tete-a-tete.
You will come over to my side, I know it.
You seem very certain.
One word, love. Curiosity. You long for freedom. You long to do what you want to do because you want it. To act on selfish impulse. You want to see what it's like. One day, you won't be able to resist.
And he kind of flirts with her.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, one day, you're going to get an opportunity to see what my side of the coin is like. And you're going to want it. You're going to want to know what it tastes like. And it's very flirty. And so she challenges him. She matches him. It's like...
Because you and I are alike. And there will come a moment when you have a chance to show it. To do the right thing.
I love those moments. I like to wave at them as they pass by.
You'll have the chance to do something... something courageous. And when you do, you'll discover something. That you're a good man.
All evidence to the contrary.
Oh, I have faith in you. Want to know why?
Do tell, dearie.
Curiosity. You're going to want it. A chance to be admired and gain the rewards that follow. You won't be able to resist. You're going to want to know what it tastes like.
You're mm-hmm. going to want to try it. And she's like really, really... like they get closer and closer.
Mm-hmm.
And then she kind of still flirting, which is way out of character. And mm-hmm. she says...
But seeing as you're a good man, I know that you've never put me in a position that would compromise my honor.
And Jack's like, no. And he's kind of like brushing her hair back and stuff. It's very...
it's very flirty.
Oh, it's very flirty. And then it's at that moment that he sees that the black spot has returned. Because it has been gone for the moment because Davy Jones gave him kind of a 3-day out.
Well, plus his collateral's gone, too.
Well, yeah.
And
he can't... He kind of closes his hand and Elizabeth is like, oh, good job, Jack. Thanks. She's very disappointed, you can tell. that he did not just, like, make out with her right there.
I think she's kind of relieved in spite of herself. Just a little bit. But Norrington points out, he's like, I would have liked for you to see that. And she's like, no, there's nothing there. It's like, I would have liked to have seen you look at me like that. And she's like, you're being crazy.
Mm-hmm. Anyway,
so they go to Illa Crucis, set to find the chest.
Mm-hmm.
And
something I found out about this island that they did all the Illa Crucis stuff on. Apparently that island is underwater, like, at least part of the day. And so they had a very, like the tide comes in and it mm-hmm. covers it. And so they had a very difficult time filming there. But it was, like, the most pristine little mm-hmm. spit of land that gave them what they, kind of the shots that they wanted. So they had to really play when's the tide coming in with all their stuff.
Love it.
And they also had to be real careful because this wasn't a particularly big piece of land. So they had to kind of skirt around the filming spot so they didn't make a bunch of footprints and tear up the sand. Which I was like, oh, you poor guys.
That sounds
awful. Like, when people think that filming is glamorous, it's not.
It's not really. It is not.
The end result is cool, but it's the getting there that's, like, weird camp.
Okay, so they're on this island. This is another thing that kind of feeds into this whole Elizabeth and Jack kind of thing, because she's trying to find the she's trying to find this chest, but all she knows is she's looking for the thing her heart wants most, and she keeps passing by. Jack is sort of in the middle of this island, and she keeps passing by, and it keeps pointing at Jack.
Mm-hmm.
And she gets frustrated at that, and so it's just frustrating. She sits down. She's like, the compass is broken. It doesn't work. And Jack picks it up and is like, yes, it does. You're sitting on it. And she, beg pardon?
I remember back in the day, because this was the mid-2000s at this point, and we still had that holdover from kind of the, I'm not necessarily going to call it conservative culture, but just sort of that we're going to make a big deal out of every little thing culture. I remember somebody on some, like, little web forum being like, oh, what it really meant is just, you know, Jack wanted Elizabeth's, you know, she's sitting on it. Jack just wanted Elizabeth and, you know, all the stuff that she has downstairs and that she's sitting on and stuff. Well, that was literally what they were saying, making a big deal. I was like, okay.
Yeah, but that's why she has that line. You beg pardon? Because it's a throwaway line. It's not supposed to be taken seriously, but it's like, you're sitting on it.
There were a lot of people that took it entirely too seriously. They took a lot of things back then very too seriously.
Well, they realize it's buried.
Mm-hmm.
It's there. Now, here's something that I would have liked to know. They open up this first chest.
Mm-hmm.
And there's letters. I would have loved to know what those letters are.
Mm-hmm. There's letters, there's lace, there's pearls. That's something, though. Actually, no. I'm not going to comment on that right now. That's a third movie thing.
All right.
But there's letters, there's lace, there's pearls, there's things in there that allude that these are mm-hmm. treasures from a lady.
Yeah.
So, keepsakes from a lady.
Okay, so they get the chest, they find it.
Mm-hmm.
And who should arrive on the island but one Will Turner?
Mm-hmm. And his first line is, how'd you get here? Sea turtles, mate, strapped to my feet.
Couple of them, strapped to my feet.
I think that one was fine. Because honestly, that very much felt like the kind of thing that you would say to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be a perfect little one-liner you would say to somebody.
Yeah. So, all right. So now, Will has the key, they have the chest. Jones, by the way, is aware he's sent his people, but they're not there yet. And so he has... So in the meantime, you have Norrington and Jack, Elizabeth, and Will. And they have this chest, and they open it up, and they see there the still-beating heart of Davy Jones. Now, this is a little bit hard to follow, sort of. So Will has a moment, and I do like this, because mm-hmm. Rigetti and Pentel Rigetti says...
Now how'd this go, Screwy?
Well, each wants the chest for himself, don't he? Mr. Norrington, I think, is trying to regain a bit of honour. Old Jack's looking to trade it, save his own skin. And Turner there, I think he's trying to settle some unresolved business twixt him and his twice-cursed pirate father.
Sad.
So the three men are having this argument, and immediately Elizabeth tries to be diplomatic, and then she says, she's like, no, we can solve it. You know, she's kind of like, and they're like, no, we're going to have this big sword fight. And Will says, here, hold this. And she goes, no! And she starts to, you know, okay. She tries to do the whole, oh, the heat. And then she falls over.
Pretends to faint. Nope, doesn't work.
It doesn't work. I don't like it. And I do like how she gets frustrated. She
actually, no, I don't mind that bit. I don't mind that bit because it does feel like that's, she's trying to get their attention. She's trying to use mm-hmm. anything and everything she can think of. And they're just, they're being... You know,
Frustrated, she's just sitting cross-legged, and that's when she knows Pintel and Rigetti have convinced themselves to take the chest for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And she chases them. Now, of course, this does result in a very interesting sword fight leading up to this bell tower
mm-hmm.
with a fairy wheel.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what ends up happening, of course, they're there at this bell tower. This sort of
fairy
like
wheel?
Wheel. Yeah, it's a fairy wheel.
Mm-mm.
What is it?
It's a water wheel.
That's what I meant.
Water wheel.
Okay, it's a water wheel. Mm-hmm. I was thinking like a wheel, like on a ferry also, because I thought it was the same thing. Doesn't matter. The point is, so that it's a water wheel on this.
Yeah, it is a water wheel.
On this old building, but they're having this sort of thing, and Jack is quickly cornered, and Norrington says,
"Do excuse me while I kill the man who ruined my life.
Be my guest.
Let us examine that claim for a moment from a Commodore, shall we? Who was it? That at the very moment you had a notorious pirate safely behind bars, saw fit to free said pirate and take your dearly beloved all to itself. Hey? So whose fault is it really that you've ended up a rum pot deckhand what takes orders from pirates?
Enough! Unfortunately, Mr. Turner, he's right!
So now, of course, this leads to the much-discussed and debated wheel fight. So, is it... Okay, is it cinematically fun to watch?
It is cinematically a ball to watch. Yes. It is so fun. There's a lot of things in this scene, in all this successive scene, that is a lot of fun to watch in the theaters when you're first taking it in. But then when you sit back and you go, hold on... Wait a second. Did this actually lend anything to the story at all? The answer is no, not really. It just took up a lot of time.
I will say, the issue here is you've been sitting through a lot of nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the first time it's the illusion of something. Mm-hmm. And it's like getting...
It goes back to kind of the old piratey style of doing things.
And I like the three different feuds that are happening.
Mm-hmm.
I like that a lot. Each of them is a man looking to for his own ends, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It all makes sense. And from a perspective of just, is it pretty? Yeah, it's great.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing. Upon a rewatch, the major draw to this fight is the fact that nothing has happened thus far.
Mm-mm.
We have been starving for a sword fight, swashbuckling sword fight, and here it is, and we're happy to get it, even though it makes no freaking sense. You have this wheel that's turning. In the meantime, they're having this fight. Really neat. I do want to watch the thing about how it was made. I've seen a couple.
It was cool. They made the big wheel, and then they've got it set on kind of this little... I don't think it was actually on it. It wasn't on a track. I think it was on a track when they put it in the jungle itself, mm-hmm. but when they kind of had it in the warehouse, it was just like almost on this, just like a rolling rig.
Were they like in a harness? Were they harnessed?
Yeah, so they had like their stuntmen and then they had like the actual actors. They had harnesses. I think depending on what parts they were doing, sometimes they were harnessed. They had a harness when they were up on top. Sometimes they didn't. And that would only be the stunt guys.
Mm-hmm.
I think they were in harnesses the whole time though, and it was like rolling with them. And then when they would have to be inside of it, they'd be strapped in.
Yeah.
And there were, like, little handles they could hold on to.
So, in the meantime, Elizabeth is trying to get the chest back from Pintel and Rigetti.
Mm-hmm.
And Davy Jones and the Dutchman show up. He's not allowed to get on the land. Mm-hmm. He does have a great line. They said, trust us to do whatever, Captain. He says, I trust you to know what happens if you fail. Mm-hmm. And you have these vicious pirates that are going after... There's one point where they
some authoritative leadership right there. You know exactly what's going to happen to you.
Straight up, man. So, Elizabeth corners Pintel and Rigetti, and they...
I feel like that line would work well on children. When said in that context, that sounds mean.
I'm cutting that shit out.
Definitely cut that out.
Okay, so...
It didn't sound like that in my head.
She's there with Pintel and Rigetti, and they realize she doesn't have a sword. They do. and they start coming after her, which is weird. Like, it's just a weird hostility for no reason.
Yeah.
Anyway, so then they realize they are being chased by the fish pirates.
Mm-hmm.
Fish pirates. Yay. Leads to, somehow, I'm trying to think. I know what it is. Never mind. The three men get out of the wheel.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhat worse for the wear, very dizzy. Jack winds up falling into an open grave, and therefore is left behind. However, he manages to crawl out at the same time one of the fish pirates has the chest and is running. Jack grabs a coconut with remarkable aim, knocks the pirate's head off, which is like a
conch shell.
Yeah.
I think his face is like a hermit crab.
Yeah. And he gets the thing, he gets the chest for himself, and then we have to deal with, you know, the head talking to the body. Oh, no, to the left. No, to the right. No. That's a tree.
Yeah.
I hate it. Thanks, I hate it. I hate it so much.
Mm-hmm.
So Jack has the key and the chest, but he's realizing very fast he cannot get out of it undetected. There's too many people that know. So there's a point where everyone's having their own sword fights.
Mm-hmm.
They're going back to the boats. So he gets the jar of... Oh, go ahead.
Well, yes. Actually, no. I think you're going in the direction I was about to go in, so keep going.
He goes to the longboat to get the jar of dirt.
Mm-hmm.
He quickly scoops out some of the dirt. For whatever reason, he puts it in the boat, not in the water, which would make more sense. And he puts the heart, takes the heart out of the chest, locks the chest, puts the heart in the jar, puts more dirt over the heart. Now, Will goes to the longboat, and he sees the chest is open, I think. Or sees the chest.
Because don't forget about Norrington. Remember, Norrington also goes over there, and this is pre-Will. I think I'm pretty sure it's pre-Will, because once Will's there, he gets knocked out.
Yeah, Will sees it, and Jack knocks him out.
They know it's Norrington first, because when they knock him out, it's right when they have to get into the boat.
Okay. Because
she's basically, because he says to Elizabeth, unless you're going to use him to hit something with and get in the boat, which I think is kind of a funny line. But yeah, Norrington has gone over there, and you see him, he sees the chest, and I think he sees the jar of dirt, and I think he saw Jack do that, and he realizes...
The heart's in there.
He realizes the heart's in there, and so what you don't actually see him do anything specific, you just see him kind of shoving his hand down his shirt, and I think you see him grab the chest, and he's like, I'll grab the chest, I'll lead him away, and because... Jack is like, oh, well, the heart's in the jar. Sure, go. Sacrifice yourself. Mm-hmm. Have fun. Then he lets him go. And he's like, you know, this is Norrington's dying wish. We'll leave him here to, you know, fend for himself. And so he and Elizabeth get in the boat. At this point, Will has been knocked out. He gets hit in the head a lot.
He does.
He gets hit in the head a lot. Actually, I just realized something. No. Jack's the one that hits him in the head, and that's payment, because he hits him with an oar, so that's payback for the time that Will hits him in the head with the oar.
It all comes around. All
that does work.
Yay.
Okay, see, there, that works. That's organic. That would make sense.
All right, so, yeah, Jack believes Norrington is sacrificing himself in vain, which he's totally down with, and he believes he's got the heart in the jar of dirt.
Mm-hmm.
So they go back aboard the Pearl, and are quickly met up with the Dutchman. And Jones is pretty much like, we're going to kill you. And he's like, no, I got it. Guess what I got?
I've got a jar of... you should do this clip here.
Hey, fish face. Do something? Come to negotiate, eh? Have you slimy git? Look what I got. I got a jar of dirt. I got a jar of dirt. And guess what's inside it?
And then, of course, that apparently was improvised by Johnny Depp.
Oh, really?
The cast reaction was real.
Nice.
Yeah. So, they have a battle, and, yeah, he has the whole thing, and it's like, well, guess what I got? I got the jar of dirt. And then Jones is like, enough of this. So, he's going to call the Kraken.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Will has seen firsthand what the Kraken can do. So, he quickly develops a plan.
Mm-hmm.
And they wait for the Kraken to just, like, crawl up, and then they all shoot at the same time.
Yeah.
Wounding the Kraken.
That doesn't really do anything, and so he realizes we got to bring out the big guns, literally. So they make a whole net full of all their gunpowder.
Yeah.
For the Kraken to like wrap around and blow it up.
That's what they do because they wait because they. She's like,
yeah, that is what they do.
Because they hit the thing. And they said it must be a reef, and immediately Will springs into action. He pulls Elizabeth. He's like, that's not a reef. He's like, it's coming. Everybody load the guns and do not fire until, and he tells Elizabeth, you know, like the whole plan where they're going to, it's like, don't shoot until.
That's right. And I remember, and this is something I think that happens a couple of times where it's like Will's holding and it seems like we're like, dude, just fire already. Just have them fire. And Elizabeth's starting to get real anxious about it. And she's going, Will, just say fire. And he's just not doing it. Will just sort of does these things without thinking. And clearly it frustrates Elizabeth.
Okay.
She does things with thinking. He does not always do things with thinking.
So Will's plan pretty much succeeds because he knows they can't kill it. And in fact, they're like, did we kill it? And he's like, no, we got to get gone. So they're like, it's going to go after the ship. Elizabeth realizes that Jack knows that it's not after the ship. It's after him. And what makes things worse is she realizes he doesn't care. And she's like, we got to go. We're going to go. And so she kind of hangs back to get him to, like, say goodbye to the ship, and they have this conversation, and she gets him to kiss her. And then she clanks him. Like,
shackles him to the mast.
To the mast. And there's a beautiful little thing. Like, they're kissing, and then you hear the clink, and a moment of comprehension, and he kind of smiles at her, and he's like,
you pulled a me.
He goes, pirate.
You, not the ship. It's not us. But this is the only way, don't you see? I'm not sorry.
Pirates.
Well, while that's happening, Will has seen them. However,
just the kiss.
Just the kiss. What
Orlando Bloom
didn't know.
Did not know.
So that reaction is genuine. And I think that's so funny. Because his look on his face is actually not that of, holy crap, you know, my fiance is making out with somebody else. It's more like, just, the fuck?
He's like,
wait, what? Hold on.
No.
It's very confused and processing.
It's like,
what?
Johnny and Kira? What the fuck?
I thought we're in the middle of this scene right now. What are we doing? What are y'all doing?
What is happening right now? It's lucky that he didn't just, like, burst out laughing and go, like, I knew it! Just, like, But no, he didn't know. Those were left out. Those pages were left out. They roll away, and Elizabeth allows everybody... The only people that know that Jack elected to stay...
Yeah, she says he elected to stay behind.
Well, that's just it. Jack... And I think, from Will's perspective, it was a very tearful... passionate kiss between two people that were going to be leaving. You know, they weren't going to be able to see each other, and this is their goodbye. And so he's in love with Elizabeth, who now he realizes is now in love with Jack, and she's going to be mourning this. And Elizabeth looks horrified and shaken, not because her love is about to die, because she has effectively killed somebody.
Yeah.
And she straight up murdered him. And anyway, so they're like, like, he elected to stay behind, and then one of them says, I guess that honest streak finally went out. And it's, you know, the whole crew's kind of speechless, and it's like, we gotta go. So Will and Elizabeth are now carrying these horribly sinking hearts for two different reasons.
And this is a perfect example of how communication...
is not their forte.
Is not their forte, and is very important in relationships. I mean...
Like, if you're going to commit a murder, you need to tell somebody.
Yes, you do. You need to talk to your significant other about it if you're going to commit a murder.
It's a hard-learned lesson.
Let them know. And then that way they can maybe advise you on how to do it better.
Or not murder them.
Or not murder them, yeah.
In this case, I don't know. But
I feel like it was the right call.
And I do like how that is resolved in the third movie, but we'll get there.
Yeah.
Anyway.
It does take a while for them, though, to finally...
It does.
Like, actually talk about it. And the thing is I'm thinking, I know, it is not it takes a hot minute for a ship to get from one place to another. Mm-hmm. So did they just not talk about it this entire time? Although, to be fair...
This is all third movie.
Well, no. Well, I mean, yes, but they go to Tia Dalma's.
Mm-hmm.
Hers wasn't necessarily, like, right there next door. It wasn't, like, an hour away.
I mean, I have to believe it wasn't... It was probably at least 2 days' journey.
Well, then that's 2 days where nobody's saying nothing.
To your point, this is... You have to think of it from Will's perspective. He loves Elizabeth.
Yeah.
And he's seeing what he thinks is Elizabeth saying goodbye to someone she really, really loved. And he doesn't want to hurt her.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very, very fresh, and he doesn't want to force her to talk about it. And he's probably just like... That's a messed up situation, which we'll deal with, but right now she's in so much pain, I really can't breach it.
Yeah.
And Elizabeth, to her credit, this is putting on her big girl pants. She makes this decision, and she carries the burden alone. And she, you know, she doesn't tell people that, hi, I sacrificed Jack for all of us.
Yeah.
She doesn't tell them. Because then they would kind of be taking on some of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it's out of self-preservation.
Well, yeah.
I don't think it's out of self-preservation at all. I think she's just... She knew that she was saving them. And if they were to know, then they would kind of take some of that on.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing to be gained from Elizabeth telling anybody was to alleviate her own guilt. Now, what she doesn't know is she could have told Will.
Because
Will would have understood. Will would have understood. Will probably would have made a very similar decision.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, one thing before they get to Tia Dalma's is you see Jack... who is still desperately trying to get out.
Mm-hmm.
And I love his, you know, like, bucker, bucker, bucker. Anyway, he gets the lamp oil, he manages to get out of the shackle, and of course, the Kraken rises and spits out Jack's hat.
Mm-hmm.
And
all that slime.
All that slime is so gross. But he puts on the hat, and in a last shining moment of defiance, goes into the Kraken's mouth, with a sword ready to stab, and that is the last we see of Captain Jack Sparrow.
Mm-hmm.
The crew, of course, sees the ship is taken.
Mm-hmm.
Davy Jones witnesses this, and they say, well, even Jack Sparrow can't best the devil.
But then that's where he's like, you know, my heart, I want
to
see it.
Something's not right. He's like, I have to see it.
And he opens it up, and there is no heart in there. And he's, damn you, Jack Sparrow! And it's very, very spitty and fun.
And Bill Nye. His tentacles are going
crazy.
His
tentacles are going nuts. I love like, when he's angry, his tentacles go nuts.
They do.
It's fun. I believe this is where they cut over and you find out...
Norrington.
That Norrington has the heart.
James shows up, and he shows them the letters of Mark.
To Beckett.
And he says, I've already filled out my name. He says, well, for that, you got to have something pretty good. I trust you have the compass. And he goes, I'll do you one better. I got the heart.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go to Tia Dalma's, and everybody around the bayou is...
Yeah, they're mourning Jack.
And they're in Tia Dalma's hut, and she's kind of offering just, like, you know, it's just some warm
consolation
beverage.
Drinks.
And they're all sitting there, and it's like, yeah, they're kind of having, like, a little wake mm-hmm. for Jack. And they're saying nice things
mm-hmm.
about how great he is and everything, and Elizabeth, yeah, I think at one point Will says something and immediately tries to gauge Elizabeth's reaction.
Mm-hmm.
She misinterprets as, I have to say something.
Mm-hmm.
He's trying to see if she feels the same way. She misinterprets as, I have to contribute. And so she says, yeah, to Jack. And Will, I think in a moment, it is a mark of how much he loves her.
Mm-hmm.
As he does say, it's like, if there was a way. And immediately Tia Dalma jumps. She says, would you do it?
If there was anything could be done to bring him back. Elizabeth.
Would you do it? Hmm? What would you? Hmm? What would any of you be willing to do? Hmm? Would you sail to the ends of the earth and beyond to fetch back Witty Jack and his precious pearl?
I.
Yes.
But she has this amazing little speech.
Mm-hmm.
Who would be in one by one? Yeah, I.
Mm-hmm.
I. And I like how Elizabeth says yes, not I.
Mm-hmm.
All right. But if you go and brave the weird and haunted shores at world's end, then you will need a captain who knows those waters.
So tell me, what's become of my ship?
Everybody else was told somebody was going to come down the stairs. Do you know who they were told? Because it wasn't Barbossa.
Who?
They were told it was Zoe Saldana as Anna Maria.
Oh.
They purposely hid Barbossa. They kept him. The thing with the boots was added in post.
Nice.
Yeah. So they didn't put him in any of the, like, they kept it under wraps.
That's
so
awesome.
Whenever
knew they didn't know, but I didn't know that part.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So they were told it was Zoe Saldana. And I wonder if she was on set at all. But, yeah, they kept him completely hidden. And he comes back. And he is just...
Because I love, like, that look. It's specifically Orlando Bloom's face. Because he's kind of in the front. And he looks... And he's very good with facial expressions. Like, you see it throughout Lord of the Rings. Like, Legolas has entirely too many facial expressions, probably, for an elf. And he just sort of looks. And he kind of does this thing with his head where he's like, what? And... His eyes get real big, and you can tell they all just sort of went, what?
But yes, you have this moment, and they were completely stunned. And he has this great moment. It said the score comes in.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of jaunty. Here's something that hit me first time I saw it. I was like, oh, this is going to get neat, because this is the first time we've seen, like, mortal Barbossa.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're going to see him when he is, like, stuff to lose. He's not going to be as nonchalant, but he's also going to be, like... MFers, I came back from the dead.
Mm-hmm.
I'm here. And he takes a bite of that apple.
I love how it just drifts down his chin. And he goes, ha 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 ha.
Yeah, tell
and
me.
The monkey. There's the little monkey on his shoulder again.
Tell me, what's become of my ship? And he takes a bite. Ha 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 ha. And then it cuts. And I've been so happy if that's where it ended. With not just the saga, but the movie.
Mm-hmm. I don't remember what the cutscene is in Pirates 2. I don't remember at all.
The indigenous tribe is now.
Oh, with
and the dog.
That's part's kind of stupid.
Does it work?
No.
No,
it doesn't.
It doesn't.
It's very much playing lip service. It's very much for the, you know, well, there might be kids here, so they'll think that's cute. And
not if they think it out. They're going to eat that dog.
Yeah.
They're going to eat that dog.
Here's the thing, though. They're cannibals. That means they eat people. So the dog might be okay. Which is another thing, which is why when they go to chase the dog, they're back earlier in the movie, because like the dog's on the land, and Jack Sparrow's just escaped from them, and the dog's on the land, and they turn, and they're all like, erg, and then they start chasing the dog. Like, dude, you're cannibals. You don't eat dog.
It's almost as if that was just as a throwaway joke and not very thought out.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so that's Pirates of the Caribbean 2.
Dead Man's Chest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, overall, I'd say there are some great talking points. There are some plot holes. There are things that don't make any sense. There's a lot of fan service. Why?
But of the three movies,
mm-hmm.
it's better than the third one.
Disagree.
I think that it's better in the third one as far as, like, the way the story line goes.
I cannot see it as...
Really?
I cannot
see it.
It
doesn't stand alone.
One movie.
No. Oh, no. It absolutely has to have the third one.
That's why I'm saying that the third
one
is better.
Okay, fair
enough. You said it's better than the third. I disagree.
Okay. Well, but the third one does not it requires the second one, though.
Yeah.
It has to, they have to have each other. It doesn't.
They do.
Okay.
But here's my objection. You had a lot of fan service.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the biggest problem with whenever you have an unexpected breakaway hit, you have this thing where it's like, they went in not trying to please a fan base because they didn't have one to please. This time around, they were like, remember that time that we did this thing? Fan service over and over. It was like they were determined to get the ones that they missed. They were going to get them on the first jokes again.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem was, you have fans. We want new jokes. We don't want to see the rehash. We're here. If they want to come on board with those jokes, have them do it in the first movie.
Mm-hmm.
Don't come back in the second. And I have a hard time going back from, you have this mature adult kind of theme. It's like, you know, the joke about...
Consider into your calculations that you robbed me of my wedding night.
So I did.
And then cut to later...
Oh, that's a tree.
I hate that.
Yeah.
And so, okay. The movie, I think, is great. But I was really trying to defend it because, again, I was so very much in love with this franchise.
Mm-hmm.
This was our first real argument.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew it was going to be okay because we were going to get through it somehow. And I knew there was another one coming. There were a lot of things I wanted to know, like, what were those letters? Yeah. I wanted to know,
yeah,
what was the deal? What was the deal with the pearl before? What's so special about the pearl? Why did Jack need Davy Jones to raise it?
Mm-hmm.
Why is Jack's soul worth 100 souls? Is it just purely out of spite? I don't know. There's a billion things I want to know. And I was like, it was a disappointing date. But this franchise is going to make it up. We're going to get through it in the third one.
Mm-hmm.
Now, yep. Whether or not that happened, I will wait to discuss for the third.
Okay.
But your thoughts?
On the second one, mm-hmm. where we are, I think that, I mean, for me, when I watched it as a 16-year-old, I had a really good time. And I had a really good time, like, because I knew, because it was left kind of on a cliffhanger. Well, mm-hmm. no, not kind of, it was. Left on a cliffhanger. And they had put a lot of stuff, they had sort of brought forth a lot of stuff that then made me be going, oh, well, they could do this. Well, this could be the story. I wonder if they're going to do this. Because I'm usually pretty good at picking up on all these little foreshadowing things.
Mm-hmm.
I had picked up on those things. I was like, oh, well, they're going to do this. Or this could be the thing. And then I got myself real hyped up right before the third movie. And found that maybe some of the things I had been hoping for
mm-hmm.
that really should have been, because they were brought up, should have been delivered, maybe were not. And I will leave it at that.
Yeah.
I found that I had fun watching it. I watched it a couple of times in theaters, and I know I watched it several times after that. However, as an adult watching it, it's different.
It's hard.
It is harder because I'm not watching it because I have a massive crush on Orlando Bloom. I am watching it because I'm watching a fun story. And then the more I watch it, I'm like, oof. Oh, they did that, didn't they? Oh, that's just like, that doesn't work anymore.
That happens.
You can't get away with that anymore.
And we all let it happen.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So
it doesn't have the same ring to it that it used to, which is kind of sad in a way.
Okay, so the first movie, still great.
Yeah, first movie is fantastic. Second I can movie, watch it until I die, and I will be fine.
Second movie has its ups and downs. I don't know if that's because I can guess perspective. I don't know if that's because I know it cannot be, in my mind, it cannot be judged without its counterpart, and that's the third
was
movie.
Was it a bit like a water wheel rolling loose in a jungle?
Maybe.
Yeah.
And I also...
Or a bone cage swinging in the air.
Oh, God, that is an oof. But I also don't know if it's because I know what happens... I know it happens on Stranger Tides. So that's a hard one, too. But we're going to get there.
Yeah.
In the
very fact that we cannot discuss much further because one requires the other
mm-hmm.
is very telling.
Okay, I'll accept that. At the time, I chalked it up to a mainstream audience not being prepared to sit through a 4-hour movie, which...
I don't think it wasn't a 4-hour. Oh, that's what you mean. If they had made it into two, made it into one. I gotcha.
But the thing is, in hindsight, there's so much they could have cut out. I don't know. For example,
oh, that's a tree.
We could have got rid of that.
Yes.
We could have got rid of some of the water wheel. And everyone's like, the water wheel's the most exciting part of that thing.
Well, that's because we didn't have a lot of good piratey stuff, like classic piratey stuff up until that point.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have a lot of good sword fights.
Fish out of water analogy is perfect here. I want a pirate in the sea. I want a pirate in the sea. When they're on the land, I don't love it as much.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But you know what?
Yeah.
The point is, to talk further about this, we would have to talk about the third film.
Yeah, and we can't.
We can't. Until next time. What we can do is we can pick this up and continue with our franchise.
Mm-hmm.
Based off of your recommendation.
For Pirates of the Caribbean.
At World's End. In the meantime, I'm Aubrey.
And I'm Leah.
And this has been...
Recommended to me by a friend.
So what's the big quote of the movie?
We're devils, we're black sheep, we're really bad eggs. Drink up, me hearties, yo-ho. Yo-ho, yo-ho, a pirate's life for me.
Bye.
Do you have any rum? Jeez. I need rum.
Yo-ho, yo-ho, a pirate's life for me. We extort, we pilfer, we filch and sack. Drink up, me hearties, yo-ho. Maraud and embezzle and even hijack. Drink up, me hearties, yo-ho. Yo-ho.